Welcome to New Pod. Presented by Knotfest.com. Primer 55 bassist Joshua Toomey and War Machine merch mastermind Ro Coley bring you a weekly dose of all things new. Album deep dives, news, interviews. This is New Pod.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of New Pod right here on Knotfest.com. As always, I'm Joshua Toomey. That is Ro Coley. We are here to talk some new news and all kinds of good new metal nuggets for you this week, man. Ro, how have you been?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm happy to be home from so much fucking traveling. I don't plan on being on an airplane until April when I go on my honeymoon. So that's what I'm waiting for, is for that. Everything else, as long as I can keep my feet planted on the ground for now, I'm pretty stoked.
Dude, this week has been I can tell I'm officially old. Like, this week, my football team played Monday Night Football, so it was up to like we won crazily at the end, so like my adrenaline was up and everything else. So I was up until like 1 a.m. I had to get up at 5:30 for work or 6, and then the next day, Nonpoint had PE in town, so I'm like hitting up Rob from Nonpoint. I'm like, what time do you guys play? So I have enough time to like take a nap. Right. And then we get to the show, and I have like a back, you know, the after show pass, and they announced Rob wasn't feeling well from the stage. So, and Rob is, you know, he had a weekly segment on Talk To Me and just really good friends with Rob. So I was like, well, he's not feeling well, I'm going to slip out. So we watched Nonpoint and we headed home. And then I, you know, had to get up the next day at 6 o'clock in the morning. And by, I was supposed to go and do a podcast here locally, like go to their studio and record. And the guy hit me up at like noon on Wednesday and was just like, hey, man, can we, reschedule? And I'm like, thank fucking Christ. I need sleep.
Once next week is over and Christmas kind of officially starts, like I want to sleep.
Turn your phone off and just hide.
You serious?
Well, man, I saw some awesome photos of a jam that you went to. I'm assuming, you know, as we record last night. You know, tell me what that was about. What that was?
Okay, yeah. So it was for a charity called Midnight Wonderland, which I mean, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of information on. It was sort of, you know, I just saw it kind of added to the Whiskey A Go Go schedule real late. And it was like, oh, featuring members of Soulfly and Ministry and Biohazard and all. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I'm down with all those guys. So yeah, I'll go and check it out. And so it ended up being like Billy from Biohazard, Evan from Biohazard, Caesar and Roy from Ministry, Marcelo Diaz, who I toured with 20 plus mm-hmm. years ago with Soulfly. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see him, though. I didn't get to see him in person. I was really kind of bummed about that. Who else was playing, though?
Christian Oldie Wobbler.
Yeah, was Christian there. Christian and Ira from Violence were there. Mm-hmm. And Christian used to be in Fear Factory. Right. Dude, that dude. Okay, I know I'm kind of doing a weird little segue, but after the show, I was at the Rainbow hanging out with Christian, and he was telling me about how he's got this ranch in Texas. Okay. Where they have to shoot all these wild pigs that just tear up the whole thing. And he was showing us video of them just taking these pigs out, like just sniper Call of Duty style. I was so blown away by it. I was like, holy shit, like, not for nothing. You know, Christian's in Violence and he was in Fear Factor and he's in Cypress Hill.
But he's got a wild, wild backstory. Like the whole him just kind of coming here and not really having a visa and then joining Fear Factory on a whim. And
like, yeah, the whole thing. Wild. The whole thing is so crazy. And when I saw Cypress Hill do their symphony, like their orchestra, like backed by the San Diego Symphony Orchestra, yeah. It was funny. Not that we were crazy far away, but we were far away that I couldn't really tell who was playing bass. And I was like, dude, whoever's doing bass for this show is fucking killing it, because they just translated all the Cypress Hill bass lines to like a stand-up bass. Yeah. And I found out it was him. And I'm like, dude, how long have you played the stand-up bass? And he's like, oh, for a while now. I'm like,
well, that was okay. The coolest part on Edge Crusher was the stand-up bass. Like,
it was just so crazy. So they all did just a ton of different songs. They did two Motorhead songs. They did A Meantime by Helmet. Nice. They did Punishment and How It Is by Biohazard. What else did they do? They did We Ain't Going Out Like That by Cypress Hill. They did a Power Flow song.
Nice.
Fuck, what else? And then some of the dudes from Body Count were there. So they did Cop Killer and they did There Goes the Neighborhood.
Nice.
I mean, it was just, it was insane. It was such an incredible, like, and it was, and it, not that it was, it wasn't jam packed by any means, but it wasn't like empty. But at the same time, it was one of those shows where you're just like, why is this place not all people right now?
Yeah.
And it was just, it was super dope. It was just, and it was easily one of the best shows I've been to in a really, really long time. And definitely one of the best jam sessions I've been to in a long time. And I mean, whenever I hear Punishment by Biohazard, I mean, that just takes me back to being like 14 years old, you know? And it was just, and like Christian played bass on there while Evan just sang. And Ira Black is one of my favorite people and just a crushing guitar player. So just,
he's played in like every band. And ever
seriously, Bullet Boys, and you know, he's
Dokken.
Yeah, he's gonna be doing Dio's Disciples. It was just like one of those shows where I wanted to record it, but then just like slam around the whole time. But it was, I couldn't, so I just recorded. but it was really cool. And then I won a raffle and I won a bunch of cool Korn stuff, which was dope.
Yeah, what kind of Korn stuff? I looked at the photos. I didn't see anything of your raffle that you got.
So yeah, you know, I didn't think about it until way later. I was like, oh man, I should have taken a bunch of pictures. I got a signed drum head by all the guys in the band. Two signed guitar sticks. Jesus, two signed drumsticks.
They are a very percussive band, so they probably do.
Yeah, and I mean, and everybody signed them, so it's like it's got Jonathan and Roy and everybody on there, and then like 45 guitar picks,
Ray,
which was crazy. Ray, excuse me, not Roy. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, Roy with his guitar sticks. You know, like
that, you know, Roy. It plays.
Yeah.
Jeez. Roy Mayorga and Korn would be awesome though, by the
yes.
way.
But but these guitar picks, it's so funny. It's like I was just kind of looking them up just to see, like, oh, like, you know, I wonder what guitar picks are on eBay and just to see kind of what's it. Dude, so I got guitar picks from like Bonnaroo from I guess when they played Alcatraz or something like that, because it said Jailhouse something or another.
Okay.
Aftershock guitar picks. I mean, they were like, and like people were selling these for like $500 on eBay, and I'm like,
yeah. What?
And then some Monkey and Head guitar strings.
Okay, cool.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty dope. So it's like, and they had a bunch of like kind of just raffle prizes, like you could win just like massages and things like that. Like a Machine Head package and stuff. And then my buddy Joaquin won a signed ESP guitar by Biohazard, which was really, I only put my raffle tickets in the little jars for the Korn stuff and the Biohazard guitar. I was like, I want one of these or both of them. But the fact that my buddy Joaquin got the guitar was like, couldn't go to a better dude. So
I was hoping the massage package came from Rob Flynn. That would be nice.
Yeah, get a massage by Rob Flynn. No, the Machine Head one was pretty rad. I mean, I have most of the stuff they had, but it was like a banner and like three shirts and like eight vinyls. I mean, it was a pretty decent package. But I mean, that was the cool thing was that with not as many people there, you had a pretty good chance of winning stuff. So
that sounds awesome, man. Yeah. We definitely need to start, you know, doing some raffles or something for the podcast, you know?
Yeah, no, I think next year, I think that's one of the things to add to next year. I think we should do a monthly giveaway.
Yeah.
Because, considering the merch that I make, I'm sure I can grab samples and whatnot and make some cool stuff.
Yeah. And speaking of next year, I do have a couple of shows I want to talk about, but, you know, kind of bringing up next year, you know, this is the last episode of 2023. We will be back in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
The show has gone bi-weekly. I don't know if people have noticed or not, but we are bi-weekly now. The Louder Than Life interviews are still kind of trickling out. I'm still sitting on like 10 of those
things. I was going to say every other day. I'm like, who else did he interview? Jesus.
Yeah. I've still got a ton of those left. It's crazy. And it's funny too, because I procrastinate so much that, like, even this last week, I was like Sunday at like 5:30, and I was like, "Oh shit, I gotta get an episode up." You know, I ran downstairs, edited real quick, you know, made a graphic, and threw it all up, man. But I'm a terrible procrastinator.
Yeah, I mean, not for nothing, editing and stuff. I remember when I used to do my zine, like,
yeah,
oh man, you got to transcribe that interview, and you're like, oh.
I will say that I can't imagine like late 90s, early 2000s transcribing, because I, when even I mean, I've been podcasting for almost 10 years now. Even 10 years ago, like, it was still play, write, play, you know, type it out, play a little bit, type it out. Now, I mean, you can run it through programs and it'll get it pretty close. And then you just got to like edit it just a little bit. But
yeah, well, after I did that, I mean, when I was doing it for my zine, that's how I became really good at dictation. Because I was like, holy crap, I could type like 100 words a minute.
Well, the hardest part about transcribing, I know we're way off on a tangent, but the hardest part of transcribing is people don't speak in sentences. And so they'll just continue to talk and, like I just did, repeat words. And, you know, it's very hard to transcribe actual dialogue.
Right. And especially depending on where you interview them. I remember I had to interview Korn twice back in the day because Jonathan was like, here, let's do the interview here. And I'm like, by this dumpster? I'm like, okay. And so we did an interview by the dumpster, but it was like, you know, trucks passing by, like he couldn't hear anything. So yeah, back in the day, that made it even harder if you're trying to do a backstage interview and you just have everybody else, all the ambient noise coming around you, and you have to like sit there and like crush your headphones against your head to try to hear what the hell is going on. It gets to be a little tough when it comes to stuff like that. But then when you're just like, all right, sit and do it and get it done. But those louder than, I mean, that's like going to, like, I saw the lineup for Sonic Temple, and it's like, if we end up doing that, it's like, oh my God, like, how many people are we going to be talking to? You know, there's 18,000 bands on that damn show.
When the Welcome to Rockville lineup popped up, I looked at it, I counted up, I was like, I think I've interviewed like 57 bands on this bill, like in the past, you know, it's like one of those, like stepping back and taking a moment and being like, oh, cool, I guess I am kind of doing some cool stuff, or we're doing some cool stuff, or some cool stuff is happening around us.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
But Ro and I have been talking a lot about segments and getting a little bit more structure into the show and not just throwing up, you know, here's a an album review, here's a this, here's a that. And just, you know, kind of having more segments. So I think we'll dive into a few of those.
Giving it a little bit more depth and a little bit more oomph you know, filling out the space a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know,
but since we last recorded, or I guess before we last recorded, because I wasn't able to talk about it because of a head PE interview, I believe was the last episode. I saw Vended here in Louisville, and it was a Tuesday night at a, you know, club here that actually is the same club where I met the guys in Primer 55 for the first time. Kind of a life changing. Every time I go there, I'm like, that's the spot. Like that's the life changing spot. But yeah, it was crazy. You know, like they Vended, you know, they're out there on the festivals. They're opening for Corey Taylor. They've got a little bit of a head start, we'll say. And I was kind of curious to see what the crowd was going to be like at this Vended show. Tuesday night here in Louisville, they played Louder Than Life recently. They've, you know, done a few things. Not a ton of Slipknot shirts. I assumed it would just be a bunch of Slipknot fans that were going to see the son of the guy from Slipknot.
Right.
Kind of a mixed crowd, like older dudes that were, you know, older, probably older Slipknot fans, but a lot of younger kids. I was really surprised. Obviously, you know, those guys are younger, but a huge demographic of just young kids out seeing an all ages show on a Tuesday night. But I will say, man, and I've tried to figure out the perfect way to say this, but I'm like, just because you get born on second base doesn't mean you have to work hard to get home. Because I mean, there's been a lot of bands come through that born on second base, got the opportunities, got the big tours, but they just weren't good.
Right.
And they didn't, you know, they've gotten every opportunity in the world and then they're terrible. But Vended, I think if you think that Slipknot's sound has changed over the years and you love that early Slipknot stuff, the sound of Vended actually reminds me a lot of that early Slipknot stuff. Obviously Griff's voice is, you know, sounds a lot like his dad.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, there's worse things that could happen there. You're like, oh God, God forbid you sound like Corey Taylor.
Right. But, right. There are worse ways to be.
But I mean, you know, you and I were at one of their first big shows at mm-hmm. Knotfest, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And then I saw them, you know, a couple of years ago, at Louder Than Life. And I've just kind of seen them progress in front of our faces. And man, they had so much intensity, so much energy. Like the venue was pretty well, you know, maybe half full or so on a Tuesday night here in town, which I know the promoter. So I texted him the next day and I was like, not a bad turnout for a Tuesday night. And he goes, exactly. because I mean, they weren't touring with anybody of note. It was like them and some, you know, regional bands or whatever. But yeah, I fully support what they're doing, man. I think that they're just going to continue to get better. And you know, there's, if you get a chance to go see them, go see them. And absolutely, if you like that early Slipknot stuff, go check them out, because I think you'll enjoy Vinted.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I noticed last time I saw them out here at the Echoplex, it's the same sort of thing. It's like, you know, I was telling my wife, like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, Corey Taylor's son and everything. And when we got to the venue, I could tell that she was a little like no tour buses, like no, you know, and it's like these guys are just traveling around in a van, RV kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that's the important thing. It's that most people can be like, oh, Corey Taylor's son, you know, nepotism, he could get whatever he wants. And it's like the fact that these guys are slugging it out on the road, you know, they're playing the tiny shitty venues, they're playing, you know, they're traveling on the cheap, if you will, you know, mm-hmm. like they're so it's like, yes, maybe there is a little bit of a push behind them in you know, certain ways, but like definitely not in other ways. I remember it was the same thing when I used to see Power Man 5000.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
everyone knew it was Rob Zombie's brother, but you know, they're playing places like the Saint in Asbury Park, which holds like 100 people, you know, and then they all pile into a cargo van. You know, it's like you go, okay, cool. Like, you know, his brother's lead singer, you know, White Zombie at the time, you know, this massive band, but these guys aren't exactly getting White Zombie money, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's a testament to like kind of just the longevity of a band, that they're not just some kind of flash in the pan. Oh, just because your daddy is this kind of thing. I think that is the best part. And I think that's why, I think in a weird way, I think that's probably what younger fans probably gravitate towards also, is just the fact that it's kind of like, I don't know, how can I put it? Like struggle recognizes struggle kind of thing, you know, like it doesn't feel like he's trying to be like, you know, oh, hail Griff, you know, Corey Taylor's son kind of thing. It's like, he's just like, nah, man, I'm just fucking, I'm one of you guys hanging out with the fans, doing the thing, you know, and then we get into the van and find a truck stop and, you know.
Yeah. That was the thing. I mean, even after the show, like he came out and nobody really even bothered him. Like Griff came, walked out and kind of went up to the, you know, around the soundboard or whatever, was standing there by himself. Like nobody's bothering him. I walk over and, you know, said, hey, you know, we've met before, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he was super nice. And he's, you know, I mean, God, he's still like, what, 19, 20? Right. You know, it's like, it's just crazy to kind of see the growth of him. And hopefully, you know, if Vinted stays Vinted forever, or if he does something else or whatever, like I think if he wants to continue doing it, obviously he has the talent and he has the chops to do it. So
that's kind of it. And especially, like I said, like you said, you know, he's like 19. It's like to be able to, I mean, this is literally the paying your dues era for him, you know? So the fact that like, he's not spoiled early on, you know, means that like by the time they do get a good couple of, you know, like 5-10 years in, you know, he'll have paid his dues and knows kind of what.
Yeah.
And then to have his dad, you know, sort of guiding him maybe on the business angle of it, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
You know, but it's not like daddy's money's paying for everything kind of thing. You know, it's like you could tell these guys, and that's kind of the attitude I got from him last time I talked to him too, was just kind of this idea of like almost like, I don't want my dad's money.
Yeah.
Like I want to do this on my own. I think that's like the standout attitude that I can really respect for sure.
Yeah, and I think when I had the drummer also on, who is Sean's son,
right?
You know, I was like, I, you know, did a little pre-interview, like, hey, well, let's keep the dad talk to a minimum, and he was like, hey, can we just not talk about it at all? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I did have like one question, but it wasn't like, hey, you guys are the kids of Slipknot, what's that like? It was
right.
It was because I just interviewed that Taipei Houston, which is Lars Ulrich's kids, and there were some other kids on the bill. I can't remember what band they are right off the top of my head, but I was just like, what do you guys think about seeing kind of the next generation of kids kind of out there touring, things like that? So that's kind of that was the question I hit them with. It wasn't like, tell me about your dad growing up,
you know? Right. What's it like being Clown's son, you know? you mean my dad? I don't know. It makes me eat my vegetables when I have to eat.
Right.
You know, like, it's like, what are you supposed to say?
And then this current week, like I said, I went to see Nonpoint here in town. Nonpoint, Head PE, Sumo Psycho, Varsity. I did miss Varsity. I do apologize. But Sumo Psycho, been on the podcast a couple of times. They definitely came on the Knotfest Twitch stream. So it was cool to kind of get to see them. Actually, I think I saw them years ago with Nonpoint also, but good to see them again. They put on a hell of a show every time I see them. Just, you know, a lot of energy. And then Head PE came out and I enjoyed myself thoroughly. And you and I talked about this after we recorded with Jared. Because, you know, you and I are very much, I think, similar on big fans of the debut record, big fans of Broke. But then there's also 13 other records since then.
Right. Yeah.
And they played like Killing Time kind of early in the set, but they slowed it down and played a little bit more funky, like reggae-ish,
right,
or whatever. So I was like, all right, that's cool. And then they played, I think they played Bartender towards the end of the set. But really all the other tracks in the middle, I really didn't know, but everybody there did.
Right.
Like it, which was awesome. Like I was, it was, you know, well, once again, it was another Tuesday. I guess Louisville is a Tuesday kind of style. It's like an F market. So it's like, all right, we'll make a couple hundred bucks and just keep the tour going.
Yeah.
But the crowd like knew all the chants, there was like people around me going ape shit for this song and that song. Fucking Jared looked great up there, you know, doing this thing. You know, between every song, they were chanting Head PE, which I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right. Like, see, that's cool, you know, especially in a market like, you know, Louisville and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's just good to know that there's still like a lot of those super solid, loyal, dedicated fans out there. You know?
I think Jared and Elias both kind of made jokes like bunch of old dudes here tonight. You know? But I mean, we were all getting much older. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of gray hair, a lot of old beards and stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess that's where we're at these days.
The hip replacement tour.
Right. Between Head PE and Nonpoint, Sky from Sumo Psycho was at the merch table. I went over and, you know, introduced myself in person because I've interviewed him three times or so. She's like, oh, hey, you know, it's great to finally meet you in person, blah, blah, blah. And talk to her for a little bit. And she actually toured with Britney Spears when she was younger, because Sky is like a Canadian pop star early in her career, like a teen Canadian pop star. So like one of her big tours was with Britney. And I was like, so did you read the Britney book? And she was talking about, yeah. She's like, it's crazy reading it now, or as opposed to touring back then. So she knows what she saw. And then she's like hearing it from that perspective too.
Right.
And she, you know, she said she kind of feels bad because like I think she said this on the podcast a long time ago, but she said like one of the rules on the tour was the bands and the crew weren't allowed to speak to Britney back then. But she said Britney would sometimes like look like, please hang out with me kind of thing, you know, like, please let me be your friend, or just, you know, just want to be a normal teenager for
an hour. That's kind of it, man. It's like, you know, when I was out on Ozzfest, I found that to be true with a lot of the bands that were out there, where everyone was, you know, it was almost kind of like, you know, as soon as they get off stage, like throw the jacket over their head and like, walk them out to the tour. And it's like, okay, like it's Ozzfest. Like, we don't, you know, it's like, nobody can see what he looks like in real, you know, like after right. the show, he turns into a different creature, you know, like something like that. It was, I just remember it being like, whenever I see stuff like that, when it's like, you know, some huge band or, you know, way back in the day when I was interning at a PR company that did all the Nine Inch Nails stuff, like all the Nothing bands. And it was like that. It's like, Trent Reznor's here, like avert your eyes, you know. And right. he probably walks out like, why the fuck is everyone avoiding me?
What is I smell like, today?
Management and everybody's going crazy to tell him not to, you know, be within 3.5 feet of Trent Reznor, or else, you know, his bodyguard's gonna kill you. And you're like, okay, like I just want to get a sprite at the bar, like
right. It is funny how many people, like there's like the. You know, the Bret Michaels stories of everyone close your dressing room when Bret Michaels is walking to the stage, right. And you're just like, I don't care. Like nobody right. cares about this stuff, man. But yeah, it's pretty wild, but she was great. You know, my wife talked to her about the Britney book. It's kind of funny seeing them talk about that. And then, the guitar player, Matt Drake, of Sumo Psycho, another guy, they've been on the podcast together. And sometimes when I see people like in real life, I'm always like kind of, I don't want to come up to him and be like, don't you know who I am? So like, I start to walk up to Matt and I like go to say like, hey, and he looked at me, he was like, Josh, and like gave me a big old giant hug. He's like, oh my God, I didn't know you were here. And like, it was just, I don't know, it's just nice when those things happen. Cause you did like, you don't know how many interviews these people do, and
right, just how many people they meet around the world.
Right,
they're like,
well, and I've never seen him in real life. You know what I'm saying? So he just kind of right. like gave me a big old giant hug, and you know, nice to meet him and all that good stuff. But cool. yeah, great to see him. You know, once again, great band. Go check out some Sumo Psycho, just some fun upbeat stuff. Had PE yeah. once again, good. Nonpoint came out, murdered like always. I mean, they're one of the most consistent live bands I think yeah, I've ever
solid.
Seen.
Super, super solid, just yeah. live band. I missed them when they played with Mudvayne and Cold Chamber. Unfortunately, I was really bummed. We got there just as they were ending.
Yeah,
but I mean, I've seen them so many times too. It's just like, but they are. They're like to me, not that they're on the same success level, if you will, but like for me, they're very similar to Seven Dust.
Yeah,
in that they're just that solid band that consistently puts on a high energy, amazing show. Like I don't think there is a bad Nonpoint show. Yeah. In the same way, I don't think I could ever. I don't think even I saw Seven Dust play, and LaJean had lost his voice, and it was still fucking amazing. You know, like yeah. he was like, "Sorry, this is really tough," you know, and like,
and then the song kicks in, he sounds
yeah,
great.
This, yeah, it's like you know, it's like that kind of thing, or like just you know when the fans kind of sing the songs for them when they're not feeling good, you know, and it's like it even raises that energy up even that much more. But yeah, when it comes to Nonpoint, I look at them on that same level of yeah. just like. Solid consistency, like you know, like they are always like a solid 8 to 9, you know, when it comes to playing.
I had seen that their guitar player Jason Zylstra has was not feeling well a couple of days before, and then from stage they said Rob wasn't feeling well, so I was just like, eh. It's funny because I had the you know the little stinky little backstage pass or whatever, and the place that they played, a place called the Mercury Ballroom, very cool updated. Venue, you know, we're downstairs, there's laundries and showers and just, you know, it's just a really nice venue. It's a newer venue, old building, newer venue kind of thing.
Right.
Actually the last place I ever talked to Vinnie Paul, that was one of the coolest nights ever, man. Hell yeah. I was playing and, Chris Kale, Five Finger Death Punch, old friend type deal, brought me backstage. So I was kind of brought in on a different level, not just like
right.
creepy fan, but like, hey, this is my friend, blah, blah, blah. Vinny holding court and just telling stories.
Right.
And, just man, what a fun night that was. But that was the night where Chris was like, leave all recording equipment at home. I do not want to be the guy that brings the podcaster. And now looking back, man, I fucking wish I would have had a recorder just
right.
sneaking out of my pocket, just listening to Vinny tell a story. Cause that was right after they played Columbus for the first time.
Oh,
cause they played Rock on the Range like a few months before. Oh. And so he was talking about how that whole day, like everybody was almost getting on his nerve, like almost had to have like the nobody look at Vinny in the eyes kind of thing.
Right.
Because everybody was like, hey man, how you doing? You doing good? You feeling all right? Everything right. good? You know? And he was like, that was more annoying than actually being in the city of
Columbus. I know. And, you know, and that's, and I remember after, you know, after Don passed and everything, and just those years after it, it's like, you know, everyone wants to pay their respects. Everyone wants to, you know, be compassionate and be mm-hmm. understanding and be respectful, you know, but it's like, you go show to show. It's like, it's just that, you know, it's like, oh, you wake up in a great mood and then suddenly somebody's like, hey man, I'm really sorry about your brother. And it's just like, man, you know, like,
yeah.
like you know that you can't get away from it, you know, because it's ever present. But at the same time, to just like every show stop, just to have somebody, you know, or multiple people saying it.
Yeah.
How just, I mean, I think just overwhelming, more so than annoying, just overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, can everyone just please stop? Please. Like, I get it. Thank you. You know, it's like when somebody sneezes like 50 times, it's like after the first four God bless yous, you're like,
right,
okay, right. like you don't have to say it anymore. You know, I think it's kind of like that must have been rough those bunch of years for him.
Like I said, he was holding court. It was a fun time. Nice. Kind of not new, but you and I are both giant Kiss fans, and I know you went to the final show. So we'll give a quick minute or two review of the final Kiss shows.
Sure. So I saw them in Baltimore and the last two shows in New York. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's funny. There's, you know, everyone's got their opinions about Kiss. Number one, you know, oh yeah, until they play again. I'm like,
right.
okay, that joke has gotten so fucking old now that I'm just like, you know what? Just shut up. Like, it's like, I feel like my dad said it. I'm like, Dad, you don't know shit about shit when it comes to Kiss, but you're going to be like one of the, oh, they'll play next week, you know? And I'm like, just shut up. Like, it's like, it's become the worst joke in my opinion. Just because everybody thinks it's clever, you know, it'd be like, if everyone came up to you right now and was like, what's up? You'd be like, that's like, nobody even cares anymore, dude. But it's,
I
like,
don't know. I still think that's funny. For you, if I ever call anybody and they answer the phone with a wasabi, you know, like, oh my God.
But it was like, you know, I just look at it this way. You know, I tell everybody this. I'm like, everyone's like, you know, Paul Stanley sounds like shit. I'm like, homeboy, 70 plus 3-4 years old.
Yeah.
Been doing this for 50 years. Like, if he didn't sound like shit right now, like, I'm like, that would be kind of amazing, to be perfectly honest with you. But there was some funny stuff though, because like his stage banter sometimes just like, you're just like, and so in Baltimore, he kept going, Baltimore. Like, he just kept saying it like that. But he said it at least like 50 times. It was so funny. And so I met up with a buddy of mine there who, ironically enough, so Me and my friend, his name is Dave. We saw Kiss at Madison Square Garden when Dave was 13 and I was 15, and it was Dave's first concert and his first Kiss concert. And so this show in Baltimore was his final Kiss concert. So we were like, oh, like, I wonder when that show was that we first went to, because it was the Hot in the Shade tour. And it ended up, it was 33 years and 20 days. because it was November 9th, 1990 was, wow, that show. So it was kind of this really cool full circle sort of moment for both of us, which was really rad. So it's like the fact that I got to spend it with a dude that I grew up with and everything was just really cool. What else? I mean, so that was a cool show. I got to take a picture with the band, and I got to go to their soundcheck party, which was the last soundcheck party of the tour, which was cool. So they played a bunch of songs they didn't play live, like Firehouse and Christine 16 and stuff, which is funny because Christine 16 is like, you know, about this guy like staring at this high school girl and all that.
Right.
You know, kind of, looking back, you're kind of like, that's not very cool. But they were like, yeah, we just started calling it Christine 60 because she would just be so much younger than us now anyway. So I was like, that's kind of funny. It was still cool though. I mean, you know, the only thing I guess that I could say that is bad, if you will, was, you know, at that final show, I did wish they had kind of done some kind of montage of stuff with the older members, you know. Tribute to Mark St. John and Eric Carr, you know. I mean, I know there's bullshit between them and Ace Frehley, and I mean, that's pretty well documented in the press and whatnot. But like, and they did show old footage, which was cool. But at the same time, it would have been good to just do that little, just that kind of thing, just that little announcement. Yeah. I thought it would have been really cool, but it's like, people were like, oh, I can't believe they didn't, try to put in this song and that song. But I was like, when you have a show like they have with so much pyro and all of that stuff, like, you can't really, it's not like seeing whatever, like Lamb of God or something like that, where you can, just inject a song here, mm-hmm, or just be like, why don't we do this song? It's just kind of fun. It's like everything has to be timed so precisely that you can't really just be like, oh, what if we just threw this song in right now? It doesn't really work that way. So, I expected the same set list and everything like that. I was fine with that. But it was still, hey man, it was still cool. I was happy to be there, ending it kind of in my own hometown and everything. And everybody that, I mean, there were people there from all over the world, and everyone was just having such a great time. The vibe was super positive. And it was just cool, and to be honest with you, as a Kiss fan, I mean, I've been a Kiss fan since I was four. So literally since 1979. And, I'm happy it's over, I'm happy it's done. It was a great bookend to sort of this part of my life. And I feel like in a weird way, like next year, weirdly enough, I feel like I can start fresh, So I think it's good. And I mean, people talk about the whole Avatar thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how did that look in the arena?
Well, I didn't know. Okay, to be perfectly honest, at first I didn't know quite what they were doing. So at the very end, all of a sudden, all this fog comes in. It's like, And I was just like,
and you're okay, like, here comes Ace Frehley.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I was like, this is different. They didn't do this last couple of shows. And so I was like, okay, what's going on? And then it shows like, you know, the Kiss era has begun and da da da. And then they all came out and Gene's got his big demonic bat wings and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. Like, so I was kind of like, okay. Like, I just didn't know where this was going. It wasn't until like the next day where they're like, they released their avatars. And I'm like, okay. Like, that's cool.
Oh, so you didn't even like catch what. In the venue, it didn't really explain what the hell was going on.
Not really. Not that I could really. I mean, that's why I was like, at first, I was just like, okay, like, but I, you know, ILM did the avatars, which I think is cool. So you have like the very best company doing the technology, you know. So in that regard, I was like, all right, cool. It's not like they just kind of are like, oh, let's just find some guy in China or India or something like that to just make this happen. But I just wonder what they're going to do with it. Like, that's kind of my, and again, it's not like I'm like, what's the deal? You know, I'm just kind of like, all right, what are they going to do? You know, is it going to just be a bunch of virtual concerts where their avatars are just singing and that's it? Or, you know, like, to me, I feel like it sort of really kind of open things up in a big way. Like, for instance, everyone talks shit about Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park because
I love that movie,
fucking terrible movie. It's that is the guilty, horrible pleasure of you know, so many of us. It's like the Star Wars holiday special. You know, but it's like, I was telling a buddy of mine, I was like, dude, how cool would it be if they took these avatars and redid Kiss Meets the Phantom, but almost like Kiss Meets the Phantom meets like Pacific Rim, where it's kind of like they're just these massive kaijus, you know, that kind of fight against something, you know, like kind of that kind of thing. So it's like, you know, you got them kind of like crawling out of like the crust of the earth kind of thing, you know, almost Godzilla, King Kong style. I was like, that could actually be kind of cool. But, you know, at this stage in the game, you know, we don't know quite where it's going to go. And at this point, for me, I just got like, when they came out with the Psycho Circus comics way back when, I mean, those were really amazing. If you ever get a chance, I mean, those comic books are really, really well done. I mean, they're really cool. They're really graphic, violent. And you know, they make Kiss look like not even superheroes, but just like these like other dimensional godly kind of creatures, almost, you know, almost Cthulhu-esque in a really weird way, you know, which I thought was really, really awesome. So I'm hoping that they do something kind of like that, you know. But again, like at this stage of the game where people are like, oh, that's so stupid. I'm like, how do we know it's stupid? They haven't done anything with it yet. So you can't really say it's stupid when they haven't done anything. So that's kind of my takeaway from it. I'm like curious to see where it goes, but I do not believe they're going to play again. You know, at least not in makeup. They're not going to put on, you know, Gene's 75. What, he's going to come out and, you know, 60 pounds of latex again? Like, come on.
We can only hope. But yeah, I've been indifferent with my Kiss fandom in the last few years. Just, I mean, like I said, the Louder Than Life a couple of years ago when they rode by in the golf carts in full regalia, right. I was like so pumped. I was like, dude, that's fucking Kiss right there. You know, but I mean, I'm an Ace and a Peter guy, you know, so it's like
weirdo.
Ace Frehley is my, you know, and he was one of the reasons I ever wanted to play music was Ace Frehley, you know, so it's just like, it's tough. I'm one of my favorite jokes. I think I saw with the avatars, because obviously the spaceman avatar is kind of based more on Tommy than Ace. And so it was like, even in Avatar world, Kiss doesn't get along.
Right. I just thought the Ace thing was funny where he was like, you know, they're just mentioning me and Peter to sell tickets. And I was just like, I'm like, dude, like, really? I don't think they really need your name to sell.
Well, one of the more recent stories was Ace thinks the avatar thing is silly and geared too much towards kids. And I'm like, isn't that kind of like the Dynasty era?
Right. I mean, that was, but again, it's really not. I mean, when you really think about it, because, you know, Gene's got huge demon bat wings and stuff, like, that's not really super kid friendly in that regard, you know. But also, like I said, we just don't know where they're going to go with it. You know,
do you think like Slipknot and Ghost and Gwar and everybody else are like taking notes right now? Like, is, if this avatar thing works, Slipknot avatars one day, Gwar avatars one day, Ghost avatars, you know, any band basically with a, you know, in masks or whatnot. mushroom head.
Well, also, it's like when you really think about it, like originally the whole thing was like holograms, you know, like the Tupac hologram or the Dio hologram. And that became like the, oh my God, like, how are people going to do this? You know? So again, it and now it's like, you know, a lot of people have abandoned that whole hologram situation. You know, that was a big thing for a little while, Michael Jackson hologram, all that kind of stuff. But it's like, now it's gotten to the point where it's like, okay, like Prince or David Bowie, you make them into an avatar and essentially have them sort of live forever in that regard. You know,
this is way off the nu metal thing, but I watched the Beatles, like the making of the new song that they just came out with like recently.
Right.
And like, they were talking about how they had this like one vocal track of John Lennon and they tried to clean it up in the 90s and just didn't have the technology. And then I guess the technology is where it is now, is they were actually able to pull out that vocal track of John basically just singing into like a tape recorder and built a song around it that also had some George Harrison stuff on it. So this song has all four Beatles on it. Came out in 2023, and it's a fascinating. It's like 12 minutes long. It's on HBO or something. It's no the
oh, I thought the song was going
on. No.
Long ass Beatles song.
No, like the little mini documentary about it. But right. It's fascinating to watch it because, like I said, it's honestly just a John. I think it's John and a piano on a little, you know, 1980 tape deck, and they pulled the voice from it and then built a song around it and had but. Since they had tried to do it in the 90s, they had a George Harrison guitar part and then were able to kind of throw and then put it all together in 2023 and release a new Beatles song.
Right.
It's wild what they can do.
But it's like, and I'm sure that there's Beatle purists who are like, oh, no, that's not really the Beatles. You know, like, it's like there's going to be a lot of that. And I think for my part, I just look at it like there's, I don't know. You know, like some people just say it's stupid or it's this or it's that. Yeah. But I mean, I just look at it like, you know, this is kind of where technology is. This is what we can do. And let's kind of see.
Dude, I've said this 1,000 times. There is a second Damage Plan album demoed.
Yeah.
You fucking take those riffs, put Phil and Rex on them. Let's go.
Right.
you know what I'm saying? And just see what comes of it, man.
Yeah. I think you just get those elitists and purists and gatekeepers who just want to be like, it's not the purest form of blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yes. Okay. Are we going to hear the Max should be in Sepultura talk again? Cause you know, like that's old to me too. You know, it's like that kind of thing, you know?
Well, it is wild that they announced their, you know, basically.
Yeah.
End of their own end of the road. Sepultura avatar is coming.
Yeah. But that's kind of it. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know. I just look at it like I you know, with the exception of Slayer, that was the only band that I really felt like, you know, man, I really wish those guys kept shit going. You know, like I felt like they had at least another record or two. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to see Sabbath's final shows. I was fortunate enough to see Slayer's final shows, Kiss's final show. You know, like to me, I'm kind of like, okay, cool. Like this is, you know, in a way for me, it helps to pave the way for all the new stuff now, you know, in a weird way. It's almost like I can kind of free up some mental real estate now for some new cool shit. You know, I don't need to hear, you know, 19 new Kiss songs or anything like that. Like I think it's good. I think I'm very content with where it ended, you know? And not only that, but I met so many cool people while I was at these three shows, you know, just people from all over the world and people who had, you know, just chatting about their own Kiss experiences and everything like that. And you really do see all the bands that Kiss has inspired, you know, everyone from Corey Taylor, you know, Stone Sour did Love Gun, and, you know, you got Anthrax and you got, you know, Pantera, and you just have, I mean, so many bands that just, you know, John 5 is a massive Kiss fan. Yeah. You just have all these kinds of people who are just such huge Kiss fans. And it really does show how much they've influenced literally like every aspect of so many of our lives, whether it's their stage show, whether it was the mystique of, you know, who are they? Who are they behind the makeup? You know, I mean, just the size of the, you know, pyro and just putting on this massive spectacle of a show, you know, I mean, that's, you know, there wouldn't be a Slipknot stage show the way it is. There wouldn't be a Ghost stage show the way it is, or any of these bands really, without Kiss really fucking sort of amping it up to this like nth degree. So like every band that it plays an arena or plays a massive festival stage really, you know, Kiss very much laid the groundwork for.
And I think that that's the one of the early, I mean, aside from the music, obviously, but one of the early things that really got me intrigued about Slipknot was not knowing who they were, not knowing what they looked like under the mask, not knowing anything about them. And I was like, man, this is my generation's Kiss.
Yeah.
Like, this is, and now, I mean, obviously we live in an internet age where like a band like Ghost, he, you know, Tobias or whatever, got it going for a little bit and kept it quiet.
Right.
But then it came out pretty quick who it was. Yeah. But, but there were so many Kiss stories back in the day that journalists knew what they looked like and had photos of them and everything else. But they weren't going to be the ones to destroy the mystique because they were the cash cow for magazines.
For magazines, right. Yeah, you know, so. And that's why I always, you know, like even just growing up and, you know, being a little kid and just wondering who these guys were. And then every picture you saw, they were just like,
right.
You know, like, man.
All the cool, like.
Yeah, totally. You know, because like as a kid, I'd be like, damn, they were so close, you know, like, you know, just really.
And you know, they had the photo before and then after, you know, but they only released the over the eyes one or whatever.
That's why I was loved about it. But I mean, but that's why, like, to me, it was a good time. It was great. I'm happy it's done. You know, I watched the pay-per-view after the fact, which was, you know, because it's like from where I was sitting. You know, I have very much one viewpoint of the show. So to have this multi-camera, you know, thing, I was like, oh shit, I didn't know they fucking did that. You know, like I didn't even see that part, you know? So it was cool to sort of fill in some weird blanks in the whole thing. But I got my picture taken with the band, which was cool too. And it was funny because I thought it was going to be one of those just like, all right, stand in front of the band, click. Okay, you're next. You know, who's next? But like, Paul and Gene like both put their hands on my shoulder and
I saw the photo. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was like this feeling of like I got like this like crazy like warm, I don't know, it's like a warm chill, if you will, you know, like it was just like it felt like this very reassuring show, you know, like it just felt like it's gonna be okay. I was like, oh my god, like it felt like when I left I was just like I couldn't stop thinking about that feeling, and now it's like I have that photo forever, and that to me is like I said, that's it's a perfect bookend for me.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, 2024, let's make new memories, make some new shit happen. That's what I say.
Nice. All right. As we kind of wrap up, man, let's do a little, should have been bigger. Mm. Do you have a should have been bigger before I do mine? Cause mine's going to fall into also new or nah. So,
I do. And okay. So I'm going to say this for this particular episode. I am, for next year, when we do the same segment, I'm going to bring this band up again, because I don't have like their records in front of me, and I really wanted to. But one of my favorite bands that I really wish was bigger was fucking Ultra Spank.
Okay,
that band. I mean, I got to work with them back in the day in the late 90s. I was working at the company that was managing them, and so me and Pete and Neil and all those guys, we always hung out. And phenomenal dudes. I mean, literally like the friendliest bunch of dudes you could ever imagine. And I fell in love with their first record. I thought it was so goddamn good. But then Progress, to me, should have launched them into the fucking stratosphere. Because that record, in my opinion, is... fuck, dude. It's like there are songs on it that are so heavy. There are songs on it that like it's just such a well-constructed record. And there's some great songs that are so mosh-inducing. There's a song called Click, which should have blown up on radio, but it just never did. And, I mean, they toured on Ozfest. I saw, you know, I've seen them a million zillion times with a ton of different bands. And, you know, Pete's voice was awesome. Just the music was great. And people just didn't, and I don't know if people just didn't really respond to it or if it was like one of those situations where the guy who A&R'd them at Epic Records, if he left or got laid off or whatever might have happened. And when that happens, that's the real unfortunate thing that happens to a band, is when the guy who champions you to the label leaves. And then they're just like, oh, okay, now we're just assigning this new guy to you. Mm-hmm. And he's got his own priority list and you're probably not on it, you know? And so now it's like you go down a bunch of rungs on that ladder. And I feel like that's really what happened to them was, you know, they had this incredible record, but nobody to really champion it. And it, which is a fucking shame. And I want everybody out there, whoever's out there, go on YouTube, go on Spotify and listen to Progress. It's amazing. And there's a B-side from the first album called Asphyxiate, which was only on one of their CD maxi singles, whatever it is, and the Japanese version. And it is a fucking banger, dude. It is such a harsh mosh. And like, I always wish they would play it live because it's so heavy and so brutal. And something that you wouldn't really expect from this, you know, kind of nu metal kind of thing. But it is an amazing, amazing song. So for those of you out there, and I will bring this up next year when we do this again, because I do want to, there's a bunch of tracks that are just mm-hmm. real standout tracks. But definitely check out their first record. Check out that B-side, Asphyxiate. And definitely listen to Progress, because that record is just, it's an A plus record for me. I think it's one of those very few like perfect records for me. I think they hit every single note, like every single checkbox, every single box got checked on that record. So that's my first one for sure. Nice.
Yeah, it's actually a band I don't think I've ever listened to them. I don't even know if I could pick them out of a lineup. So I will check them out.
Please check. the lead singer Pete and Neil, the two dudes in the band, they did a band called Low Pro, and I know Stain, it was either Aaron from Stain or Mike from Stain had a label or something like that, and they picked them up and they took them on a bunch of tours, and it same thing, it just kind of just went. It was good, but to me, like, Ultra Spank was just like that heavier aspect of it. But yeah, man, seriously, I invite you to fucking please check out those records. Because
I will say, too, the album cover that I'm thinking in my head was very unassuming. It's like gray.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, the first album had this very, like, I don't know what they were thinking when they did that one. It had like this kind of like chrome-ish.
Yeah.
Grayish kind of thing, which was just, it was just very nondescript. Like you couldn't have picked it out. It was just a boring album cover. But the next album cover was the mouse with the ear growing out of its back, like the Petri dish mouse, where they were like growing like organs onto different animals and stuff. which was great. Cause it's just this little mouse with an ear growing, like a human ear growing out of its back. And it just says Progress. Yeah. And it was just amazing. So yeah, please check
it out. So Ultra Spank. Yeah. We'll check them out. You know, I, you've actually had this idea for the segment for a while and I've always kind of pushed back on it. I'm very much like, I'm very cynical. I told you this when it comes to like, should have been bigger. I'm like, well, you should have wrote better songs. You should have wrote like, you know what I'm saying? Like you should have, I don't know. There's something in the world that a good song is a good song and it'll take off. And I don't know. I feel that way about a lot of things, but so, I mean, I know that you need the right push and you need the right, this, you need the That's right timing and all the stuff too. But I'm always like, sometimes you just break through. So I was like, you know what? Who should have been bigger? And to me, it's not necessarily not that they aren't big, but to me, they should have been bigger on their own merit. And I'm going to go with Alien Ant Farm because fucking love Anthology as a record, but they get lumped in with the Smooth Criminal thing is like a double-edged sword because they get some, it gets you checking them out, but they also get stuck in this. They're only, they're the Smooth Criminal band.
Right. Right.
But if you listen to Anthology, like Movies and like the other singles on the record were so good. And they had such cool, you know, the Ty, bass player was great. Guitar player is great. Like the whole band is great.
Yeah. And, same thing. A super solid band.
Yeah.
You know,
Dryden, great vocalist.
Yeah.
I told the story. I don't know if I told it on here or if I told it. I think I did it in the Flogging Molly episode, but I didn't say what band it was. But we were talking about me and the guy from Flogging Molly. We're talking about Warped Tour and not knowing when bands were going to be playing and missing a band you wanted to see because you got there a little bit too late because they were the first band of the day or just that whole thing. And the 1 year that I was like, I am not going to miss Alien Ant Farm. I show up and they were the final band of the night. And they actually played after 311, which I was I was like, what a wild, you know, in 99, 98, 2000, whatever year that was, that's a wild time to be even back then going on after 311. But yeah, the, that's one album. I mean, I can listen to that album, you know, front to back. I love it. I think I did a an episode with Ty Zamora, the bass player, one of my favorite bass players back then. Such a good, such an incredible bass player. He's still playing in like who is he out with? God, it's like my mind is blanking. I'm like, I want to say like Shooty's Groove, but it's it's not them. It's like one of the that's not them.
That brought me back.
Let's see here, Ty Zamora.
But that's kind of it though. It's like, you know, back in those, in the late 90s, you know, when you had you know, Limp Bizkit doing Faith and Blue Orgy doing Blue Monday and
Slightly Stupid.
Slightly Stupid.
Yeah. And then that's one of those bands that like you won't know, but they're gonna pack like one of the bigger venues in your town.
Seriously.
You know?
Seriously, yeah. They play like huge like amphitheaters out here. They just huge one out recently.
Yeah, I think he's a bass tech, but he also gets out and plays with them. I don't know. I had him on. He had a he did a band. He did a side band or whatever, and I had him on for that called like Meek, but it was spelt like it was like / M E with like a thing over it. K another / I was like, this is impossible.
Yeah, right. You're like, dude, you're killing me right now.
But yeah, man, I will say that I'm kind of a hypocrite in this because this is the saying that we talked about Het P.E. earlier, being a big fan of two records, and they've got 13 more that we've never listened to. You know, Alien Ant Farm has a few records since the first album that I probably couldn't pick out of a lineup either. But yeah, that first Alien Ant Farm album, start to finish, is one of my faves.
Yeah, no, that's fucking rad. No, and they were, man, same thing, just a solid band. And that's the unfortunate part of that, you know, just the new metal era in and of itself, is that you had all these bands, but when you have record labels that are just throwing stupid money to radio stations and all these kinds of things, and just, you know, trying to see who's got the bigger dick, you know, and it just becomes like, oh, okay, cool, Smooth Criminal. And it just becomes, yeah, you just become the Smooth Criminal band, you know, like, and that's always an issue. And then, and same thing, like Orgy, that happened to also, you know, like, oh, that's the Blue Monday band, you know,
right. When Candy Ass is a great record.
Yeah. When Candy Ass is a great record on its own merit, you know, and that's why I like this. I like this segment, because it's like, we can really kind of just, you know, sort of call attention to some of these bands that really did get lost in the shuffle, you know, when Korn and Deftones and Limp Bizkit were all just kind of, you know, and Linkin Park were all ruling the world. It's like, you really did have all of these bands that were just like, you know, which band gets to sort of ride the coattails of any of these other bands, you know? You had System of a Down, but then you had like, what was the name of that band that always reminded me of them? Dog Fashion Disco.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, you always had those kinds of bands, and then everyone, all these labels were just trying to sign, well, we need a new Korn, and we need a new Limp Bizkit, we need a new Linkin Park, we need a new System of a Down, you know. So that's why it's like, you end up with these bands that sort of became part of the tangle, you know, but, you know, some of them kind of made it a little bit, but then the rest just kind of, you know, became these like loose threads, but in their own way, they had so much to offer and did, and were so incredible. But that people, you know, it didn't click with people, or, you know, like I said, it's like when you have these record label priorities, and especially with the way labels were working back then, I mean, I'm sure it's similar to now, but it's like, okay, great. Like, if this thing doesn't take off in 6 months, we're on to the next project.
Yeah.
Like, and these guys are like, we're still on tour. You know, like, we still need to sell records. And the label's like, yeah, whatever. Just here. We're just going to give you the bare minimum. But again, it's like when they do that, you know, it just pushes those guys aside, and then suddenly, you know, and not that I'm saying this in a bad way, but like, it's like, oh, welcome Killswitch Engage, you know, and then here's the new priority, you know, that kind of thing. So many of these bands just really just got lost, and that's why I want to call attention to some of these bands that people don't really, you know, I mean, like what you were saying, you know, like You know, Ultras Bank was never really on your radar. I can understand why, because at that time you were probably getting pummeled with, like, you know, how many Streetwise samplers were you getting?
Right.
Record label samplers, CD samplers, cassette. You know, everybody was just inundated with so much stuff that it just became really tough to sift through the trash from the not trash. And then what ends up really taking over is like, oh, but Limp Bizkit's playing. Oh, okay, cool. Then that's where my focus is going to go.
Yeah, it is. So. It is kind of wild what you're talking about, though, where labels, even, I mean, not that labels really are a big thing now, but back then is like, you know, you got 6 months to either hit or not. And then we're moving on.
We're moving on, then,
right? You know, we're talking to, and then if you look at like 70, if like I love Behind the Music and all those, you know, little mini documentary type shows. How many of those Behind the Musics on 70s bands are like, we put out four major label albums and then the fifth one hit. And even like a even Kiss, you know, Kiss was a perfect example. Like what, three albums before Alive.
Yeah.
And then, they finally hit when they, and that comes out. There was a, you know, way off new metal, but Hall & Oates, like Hall & Oates have like four out major label albums out before the big one. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just in how many of these bands don't get the time to develop into what they can become. Because if you don't hit on your first record, it's just like, all right, well, and it's almost like what I said earlier. I'm like, write better songs. Either you have it or you don't, and you have to have it right out the gate.
Right. And I find that, like, you know, I mean, because I'm pretty critical about management and stuff like that as well, because it's like, I find that if managers, you know, because management was the same way, you know, like, oh, okay, well, we have this band, and then, you know, suddenly they're not taking that band's phone calls anymore, you know, and it's like, yeah, because we have this new band that I'm really pushing, you know. So I think it became one of these things where it's sort of like these managers and record labels built these bands up to be like, oh my God, you guys are great. You guys are great. And then they're like, fuck, they think we're great. We're going to do all these great things. And then when they get suddenly shunted aside to be a B level or C level band, now they suddenly have to fend for themselves when they kind of put all of their trust in the label or all their trust into management, you know, and now they're kind of left rudderless. You know, and then now they're trying to fight for any scrap they can get, you know, meanwhile, everybody's focus now is Linkin Park or Limp Bizkit or whatever. So it's like, they're kind of the, what is it, like Oliver Twist, you know, like, please, sir, can I have some more, you know, it's that kind of thing. And then you just kind of get away from me, kid, you bother me, you know, it's like you get that kind of vibe. So that's why I want to call attention to some of those bands that, you know, either maybe didn't get signed to the big label or maybe did. I mean, Ultras Bank was on Epic Records. I mean, that's, you know, Korn and fucking, you know, Sony and all. I mean, they were on a massive label.
All right, well, let's wrap it up on a new or nah with Alien Ant Farm real quick. So new or nah, Alien Ant Farm, what do you think?
I think definitely new. I think, like I was saying, they were part of the new metal tangle, if you will. You know, again, they came out at that sweet spot of new metal, which was late 90s, right into the 2000s. And I think they got swept up in the craziness of it all, you know. But much like the new metal tornado that it was, you know, every once in a while you have the bands that were right in the eye of the tornado, the eye of the storm, and then you get the cows that get flung out four counties away. And I think they were one of the cows that got flung four counties away. But doesn't make the milk any less tasty, and doesn't make the meat any less tender. So they really did have that vibe. And I think trying to get big on Smooth Criminal, I think at the time was the right move, just because it really did, you know, try to capitalize on that whole vibe of the 80s nostalgia. I mean, and everybody was trying to do it. But yeah, I think I do wish they had gotten a lot bigger than they did. But I think they achieved something pretty decent. I think along the same lines as like a Head PE.
Yeah.
And Nonpoint, you know, just solid band, really had to slog it through and push through, but also had to compete with every other label that was spending $1 trillion on all of their bands.
Yeah, obviously I'm going to say that they were also new. Obviously nothing more new metal than a cover. Definitely, you know, from kind the of 80s. The Limp Bizkit Faith type deal, all that stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, Alien Ant Farm, definitely new.
Definitely
and, new. So yeah, so let us know, what do you guys think? New or nah, Alien Ant Farm? Let us know in the comments. So until 2024, when New Pod 2.0 comes, I think we should end this like the new era of Kiss has become.
Right. Now we're just going to have avatars of us.
It's like,
dum, 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 dum.
Listeners.
Yeah, right. We'll have a countdown.
Yeah, there we go.
And then at the end, it'll just be like, hey, what's up, guys?
It's just actually, she's still up. It's just us again. I'll just move the boxes around. Like, this is the show now.
The new era has begun. Rose on the left, Josh is on the right. This is how it's going to be from now on, folks. We knew we'd blow your mind somehow, and that's how we do it. Who knows what 2025 is going to be? Maybe he'll be on the top, and I'll be on the bottom. Who knows? Wow. It could be anything. There's so many.
It could be anything. All right, so until 2024, everybody have a happy holidays, have a safe new year.
Yes,
have
thank
a safe
you for listening for through 2023 and supporting what we're doing, and we really appreciate it. We appreciate all the emails and all the messages and the comments, and we do want to do a lot more stuff in 2024. We want to do more, you know, contests and giveaways, more polls. Like, we just want to make it as fun as we can for everybody.
Nice community of everybody.
Yeah, we're having a great time, and we hope you guys are having a great time. So thank you for the support.
Absolutely. So until the new year, in new year, I'm Joshua Toomey, and that is Ro Coley, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Hell yeah, have a great holiday, everyone.
Thanks for listening to New Pod. Follow Toomey at Talk Toomey Talk and Ro at War Machine Merch. Rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends. Until next week, keep it new.